Okay, I can start with a bit of a quiz this afternoon. Does anyone know, or rather, can anyone guess what the average age is that a woman gets married at nowadays? Average age for a woman to get married. Slightly different from a man, but... Ooh, 35? Higher, lower? Brucey, yeah. 28? 31? Not bad. 30, apparently. Well, that's as of 2009, so it might have changed radically. 30, apparently, is the average age 2009 for a woman to get married. Slightly higher for a man. Let's go back. 1991. Not further, it's right back to 25. And back to 1981, 23. So 30 years, the change has been pretty significant. 23 up to 30. People are staying single for a lot longer. Now, there's all sorts of proposed reasons to do with some of them economic. It takes longer to get established, some people feel. A different society attitude. So I want to sort of date. I want to try the field, play the field a bit more before I settle down. Others think it's to do with careers, more particularly, I suppose, for women, more opportunities in careers than perhaps there were 30, 40 years ago. So I want to spend longer at my career before I take the decision to get married or not. Either way, whatever the reasons, and I'm not going to go into those particularly today, singleness is an increasing issue, if I can use that word, within the church as well as outside. This series, looking at devotion to God in the area of relationships, in sex, in marriage, in singleness, it's important that we do spend some time thinking about, well, being single. And it might be worth saying right now that single, in the Bible's point of view, just means not married. Now, in case you think I'm sort of making obvious points, in our society, the boundaries blur a bit more, don't they? We think of single being in no sort of relationship whatsoever. And then there's kind of going out, or perhaps dating, going out. Then there's engagement, and then there's marriage. And it's more of a spectrum. The Bible's pretty blunt. You're single or you're married. If you get engaged or betrothed, that's job done, effectively. And do you notice that when Joseph hears Mary's pregnant from the angel, he decides he has to divorce Mary. Like, why do you have to divorce her if they're just betrothed, just engaged? Because in the Bible society, engagement was a much more serious thing. It was effectively stage one married already. So whether you're single, not going out with anyone, whether you're in a relationship, even if you're engaged, in our terminology, our modern sense of the word, you are, in the Bible's point of view, for now, single. It might be worth saying, too, that even if you're married, I hope what we look at this afternoon, is important. First of all, it's always important to think about things that affect the rest of the family. We don't just care about ourselves, do we? If it's not something directly relevant for me, I don't care, is a pretty unchristian attitude. We want to know how to help our brothers and sisters who are Christian, who are single, or our brothers, perhaps we have children who are single, family members who are single. What does the Bible have to say to them? How can we help them? And the final reason, and I hope this isn't too morbid, but if you are married, over 50% of you just over 50% of you married people will be single again one day, won't we? I'm married. Either George or I one day will be single again. And so marriage is very much a temporary thing, isn't it? And actually, if you put it into the sort of eternal perspective, marriage is incredibly, incredibly temporary. Even if you marry at 23, live to you're 75, you've got 50 years of being married. But actually, we know from the Bible, don't we, that life lasts forever. We're eternal creatures. Once you're born, that's it. You're never going to cease to exist. So marriage is the tiniest fraction of your life viewed in the big picture. Singleness, therefore, is an important topic. And really, I want to look at sort of three things from this passage. We're not going to pick out every verse. There are some parts in there that are just confusing, some parts of the reading that Mike brought to us. And I'm afraid because we're not ploughing through the book sequentially, we're not going to touch on all of them. So if there are bits you heard and thought, what on earth is he on about there, and I don't pick them up, you can try asking afterwards, but my answer might well be, I'm not sure either, I'm afraid. One day perhaps we'll come back and do 1 Corinthians sequentially, and then we'll pick through more slowly. but three big picture points that really all come off this theme that we're taking for the series that came out of 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. It's the key verse we've looked at. You are not your own. You were bought with a price. So glorify God with your body or in your body. That the question we're going to look at today is not just what does the Bible say about singleness, but rather how can I use my singleness for the glory of God? How can I use the time I've been given, whether that's a short time or a long term time, to best serve God? And therefore, as we thought about last week, actually to live the most satisfied, fulfilling life. And just like last week, I want to start with a fact, I suppose an idea to try and get into our heads that is pretty countercultural. See, in our culture, singleness is bad, isn't it? Almost every relationship, every magazine, every film, you watch, it says you need to be single to be happy. But it's not true. So the first thing that I think Paul wants to tell us in this passage, Paul wrote 1 Corinthians, is that singleness is a gift to be used, not a disease to be cured. Okay, singleness, a gift to be used, not a disease to be cured or a problem to be solved. Let's have a look. We'll dive down. Chapter 7, verse 27. At the very least, we can say that Paul is, well, he's not obsessed with marriage and love and relationships as our society is. So verse 27, are you bound to a wife? As in, are you married? Well, don't seek to be free. Don't run away from your relationship. Are you free from a wife? Are you single? Don't seek a wife. He's certainly not obsessed with finding each of the Corinthians. Aged woman marries, she's not sinned. He's just pretty indifferent about the whole subject. Marriage versus singleness is not a sort of holiness versus unholiness debate. It's not sin versus righteousness. If you're single, that's fine. If you're married, that's fine. Paul is far from obsessed with marriage. And actually, without disparaging marriage, so without playing marriage down as something unimportant or bad, which he certainly doesn't think, verses 7 and 8, a bit earlier than the passage Mike read. Chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. Paul says, and Paul was single, I wish that all were as I myself am. But each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say, it's good for them to remain single as I am. It's good to remain single. Is that in your thinking? Even right at the beginning, Paul can say it is good to remain single. This is a good thing. In fact, he even calls it. If you're a Christian, if you've stopped. My gift. It can be a success. We've got to find out exactly what my particular sort of superpower is. It doesn't really work like that in the Bible. Not just things that sort of God adds to us after we become Christians, some sort of new magic power or something. Gifts often are about our natural abilities. So I could play the piano before I became a Christian. I become a Christian. I can still play the piano. My gift towards the church, to serve the church, might well be music. If I could cook before I became a Christian, I can still cook after I became a Christian, my gift might well be cooking and hospitality. Well, similarly with our relationships, with our status in life. If you're single and a Christian, you've got the gift of singleness, at least for now. Gifts aren't superpowers. They're not even special abilities. I'm not even sure that the gift of singleness is about enjoying being single or finding being single easy. When Paul says in verse 7, each has his own gift from God, he's contrasting the gift of singleness and the gift of marriage. Now, if we were to say that the gift of singleness is happy about being single, being happy about being single, we're going to end ourselves in all sorts of trouble with marriage. Imagine a husband, and he finds a beautiful girl, he marries her, they settle down, he's sure he's got the gift of marriage. 5 years on, they've got two kids. They're screaming. They've got no sleep. There's arguments every morning over breakfast, dirty nappies. Suddenly the husband, you know what, I'm not really enjoying this. Perhaps I've not got the gift of marriage. well, would that be okay for him to just walk out? Sorry, I've not got the gift of marriage. Of course not. You're married, you've got the gift of marriage. I mean, if you're single, then, at least for now, you've got the gift of singleness. It's a status rather than a special ability. And that status might come around for a number of reasons. We'll come back to 1 Corinthians, but just flick back to Matthew's Gospel. And we get some words from Jesus on the same topic. It's Matthew in chapter 19, page 994. Matthew chapter 19, Jesus talking to his disciples about the whole subject of marriage and divorce, all sorts of things we won't look at today. We'll pick up at verse 11. That's Jesus, said to them, "Not everyone can receive this saying, but only to those whom it's given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, there are eunuchs who've been made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who've made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven." Now, a eunuch is simply someone who has, for whatever reason, committed themselves to singleness. And actually, Jesus says there are three potential reasons for someone staying single for life. First, there are those who've been eunuchs from birth. There are some people who've just got no interest in marriage and relationships and sex. It's just sort of in their DNA, as it were. And again, it might not be hugely common, but if that's you, that's fine. In church, perhaps where we celebrate marriage, there's a danger of betraying it as the only route. And no, it's fine. If you're someone who doesn't want to get married, you're just not interested that way, that's fine. Still others have been made eunuchs by men. I think this is the idea of circumstances forcing you into singleness. In Jesus' day, certain jobs committed you to singleness. Perhaps if you're going to be a treasurer in the royal palace. Perhaps if you're going to be the person who looked after the queen, well, the king insisted that you would be a eunuch. In our day, that's less likely to be the case. But again, for some professions, you decide you want to be a frontline missionary in sort of hostile territory. You think of some of the Arabic countries, North Korea. It's going to be pretty difficult to do that as a married man. Circumstances force themselves upon you. Or perhaps you're aware you've got to care for parents, for family, disabled relatives, and just circumstances mean, well, that's it. It may not be your sort of heart's desire, but circumstances move you towards being single. Or finally, Jesus' third example, those who've made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. And perhaps here, actually, the missionary example is a better one. Some people decide, for the sake of the gospel, I'm going to stay single. For the sake of the kingdom, I will renounce marriage. Whatever the reason is for you being single, whether it's your own choice or actually something that's been put on you, it is still, in the words of 1 Corinthians, a gift. A gift. And that hugely should change our perspective on it. It means we need to fight against the idea that singleness is somehow a curse, a problem to be solved. It's so easy to slip into this, and I wonder, it's even in church, actually. We can begin to think of ourselves, my main problem, my main need is a girlfriend or a husband. That's what I really need. If only I had that, then life would be okay. That's just not true, says Paul. It's actually hugely freeing. Because ultimately, we can't ensure that we get married, can we? And we can ask people out, we can go on dates, but we can't force it to happen. And the great news is from Paul is actually that even if we end up single for life, for that short 50-year period, we're not somehow missing out. It's a gift, not a curse. And again, if I could just take a moment to say, this is not just an important thing to hear if you are presently single. Some of you here are single, some of you are married. It's massively important to hear if you're already married. And perhaps doubly so if you're a parent. I'm slightly careful how I put this, but even in short amount of time I've been in ministry, already I've seen damage done by mums, and I'm afraid it tends to be mums more than dads, obsessing about whether their daughters, and again, it tends to be the daughters rather than the sons they worry about, are going to get married. They care far more about whether their daughter has got a man than how their daughter's walking with the Lord. And actually puts a massive amount of pressure on these poor girls. And perhaps their daughter doesn't want to get married, or perhaps she does and is struggling with being single. That's fine, by the way. If you find it hard, that's not a problem. But it doesn't help if mum or dad is constantly asking any progress on the man front. Sort of Christian version of Miranda. It's an absolute nightmare. Singleness is not a disease needing to be cured. It's a gift from the Lord. And who are we, frankly, to call bad what the Lord has called good? Parents, it is not your prime aim to find your son or your daughter a partner. If you are single, have you begun to think, I must have a wife, a husband to be happy? I can't bear the thought of never having a guy. Good news is, that is not true. That is not true. Remember our theme verse, you were bought at a price. God has paid an incredible price to free you. It was a voluntary price. We said this last week. God didn't have to send his son to die for you. And it was a hugely costly price. It meant the death of his only son. If he's given that for you, if that was his first gift for you, that his son crucified on a cross, then any other gift he gives you must be for your good too. It might not feel sort of wonderful and magical straight away, but it must be for your good. God has proved that he is for you, not against you. So if he doesn't then give you a husband, or rather if he does then give you the gift of singleness, then somehow that is for your blessing and not for your cursing. You were bought at a price, an incredible price. His love for you is unalterable. So, firstly, singleness, a gift to be used and not a curse to be cured. Secondly, though, Paul goes a bit further and he says that singleness is for the Lord. Singleness is for the Lord. This is going, if you like, into why it's a gift. Why would God ever give the gift of singleness? For the Lord. This is really verses 32 to 35 in the passage. Just look again what he says there. Verse 32, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man, so the single person, is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. The married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. His interests are divided. Verse 34, so it is with the unmarried and the married woman too. If you like, Paul's thinking about your thoughts and your life like a pie chart. If you're unmarried, well, your pie can be more or less entirely fixed on God. My thought life is focused on serving the Lord. If I'm married, it is natural and indeed right that some of my time, a great deal of my time, in fact, is spent thinking about my wife or my husband or my children. That's a good thing. I want to be clear that nothing I say this week is meant to make marriage sound like a bad thing, not at all. But it is inevitable that you have divided priorities if you're married. Absolutely unavoidable. If you look at verse 35, Paul says, I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, so you don't have to stay single, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. It's that verse that sort of gave me the idea of calling the series devoted. Well, Paul says, look, I want you to be single-minded, wholly devoted to Christ, and it will help. It'll just be a help. It's not essential, but it'll be a help to that if you're single. In order to be able to say that, Paul must think that me giving myself to the Lord's service is a good thing. A good thing both for the Lord and for me. He must think there's more joy in serving and devoting myself to someone else than there is in finding someone to be my partner. And actually, this is a very biblical way of thinking about things. A lot of the time, the world will say that the reason you need a partner is you need someone to love you. I need someone to look after me, to care for me, to protect me, to serve me. If you like, the partner is there and all the arrows are going this way towards me. They are there to sort me out, to help me. It's actually quite a selfish way of thinking about marriage. the Bible says is we're created to find our fullness and to be most satisfied, to be most happy, to be most blessed, not when we can find people to serve us or protect us or to love us or to care for us, but actually when we can find, we can turn the arrows round and find people to serve, protect, love, give ourselves to. That's why when we think about marriage, the emphasis is going to be far more on what we do for our partners than what we can sort of get from them. But ultimately, in Paul's way of thinking, the way to be most fulfilled is to give yourself to the Lord. You'll get far more joy out of serving the Lord with 90% of the pie chart of your thoughts, your time, your effort, your energies, your money, than you will if you spend 50% on the Lord and 40% on your partner, to put it crudely. The more you give to the Lord's service, well, actually, the more full you'll be. What does this mean practically? What does it mean practically? Certainly, I think it covers the idea that if you're single, you've got more time on your hands. You've got more time to serve. You're less distracted. But I think he's going further than that. Okay, it's not just Paul's way of saying, look, if you're single, you ought to go on the Sunday Club Rota twice, and lucky you, what a gift. Okay, he's going deeper. The devotion that Paul talks about in these verses, 32 through 35, as I've said, it is about, I suppose, our thought life, our inner life. I'm not anxious. I'm not concerned as much about another person as I am about the Lord. Singleness, if you like, is purifying. It can push me towards Christ. In the Bible's worldview, any sort of suffering is also a gift. Now, for some of you, singleness will feel a little bit like suffering. I got married at 30, and frankly, I wanted to get married. If anyone had said yes, I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but you know, at 21, I think I'd have hoped I'd married before I was 30. Now, the Lord's plans were good for me, but for a lot of that time, I didn't want to be single. And I think I had largely failed to understand these verses. You see, what marriage can do to you if you're not careful is put a little God substitute in place of the real God. See, it's right that I need someone to protect me, someone to look after me. I'm made to want to be loved. All those things are true. But ultimately, they're true because I'm created to be someone who's cared for by God, who has a father who looks after me, a father who can protect me, a father who's got my best interests at heart. And it's possible, it's just possible that when you get married, you begin to think, actually, I don't need God so much because I've got my wife or my spouse. They're where I find my true fulfillment. They're the ones who'll care for me, look after me, give me love. And so again, my devotion to Christ can just drop a little bit because I'd never say it, but in the back of my mind, I start thinking, well, I don't need God quite as much. The single person has got nowhere else to go. Now, the single person is pushed towards God when these needs arise. And again, in Paul's worldview, that's not a loss, but a gain. Not a loss, but a gain. Imagine a father, he says to his little daughter, comes to him and says, look, I want a pony. Okay? And he says, look, you're not having a pony yet. You're too young for a pony. He says, I really want a pony. So he says, okay, I'll give you a pony on your 12th birthday. And until that time, he gives her a poster, okay, a nice, lovely picture of a horse. Look, that's what's coming to you. That's what you'll have, but not for another year. So she sticks it on her wall, and all year she looks and she counts down the days to her birthday. And the day comes, and there in the, you know, in the back garden, big garden, there's the pony. And the little girl gets up that morning, looks out the window, sees the pony, looks at a wall and sees actually the poster's gone. And she storms down to her, Dad, where's that poster? Says, well, you don't need the poster, well, I've given you the pony. Where's the poster? I want the poster. Where's the picture of the pony? Says, love, there's a real life pony in the back. I don't care, I want the poster. Ridiculous. Why would you want the image when you've got the reality? What's going on in marriage? In marriage, God gives us the gift of marriage to model his love for the church, his love for people. It's the picture used in Ephesians 5 in particular. We've looked at a couple of times at Christchurch. Marriage is never ultimate. It's momentary. Marriage is momentary, to use John Piper's phrase. It will come to an end. And it was always meant to point to something bigger. And the point is, if you're a Christian, you've got the reality, the bigger thing. You've got God. So just because you haven't got the image, the picture, it doesn't matter. You're not missing anything. Even those who are married only have it for a moment. The picture is meant to point to something much greater. And if you're a Christian, you have the greater thing. That means if I'm single, whilst it's okay to struggle, we all struggle in a fallen world, there are some things I need to avoid. I've pinched these from a book by a guy called Al Sue, can't pronounce his name properly, called The Single Issue. You're welcome to borrow it, anyone who wants to. He points out three dangers for single people that is so easy to fall into, and I'm coming straight from him. The first is, he says, the danger of not growing up. I would suspect this is more a bloke than a girl's problem. Singleness, he says, can mean I just stay as a child. I basically have an extended adolescence. I've got no one I have to care for specifically. I don't have to look after anyone with my money and my time. And so actually, I just stay living basically like a child. It's just that I don't have mum and dad telling me what to do anymore, so I'm free. I can spend all night on the computer, all night watching TV, all night on the internet. I don't take responsibility. I don't do the kind of things that grown-ups are meant to do. I don't have people round for dinner, other people in church, because, hey, I'm just a single person. That's for the married people. I don't invest in the kind of other people at church who aren't naturally like me. I just hang around with other single people. I function like a child. Says Sue. No, you're an adult. Act like one, single or married. The second danger he lists is self-centeredness. And one of the most helpful parts of this book, actually, is an interview at the end with John Stott. Many of you know John Stott. He was a fantastic minister of the gospel, died, I think, last year or the year before, in his 80s, was single his whole life. And in the interview, Al Sue asks Stott about the dangers of being single. Stott says this: apart from sexual temptation, the greatest danger I think we face is self-centeredness. We may live alone and have total freedom to plan our schedule, nobody else to modify it or even give us advice. And if we're not careful, we might find ourselves thinking the whole world revolves around us. Again, I think back to my day single. That's just incredibly accurate diagnosis. There are certain times I've got to be placed, I've got to be at work, there is your church commitment, but basically my money, my time, my needs, they're mine. A danger, if you're not forced, and marriage just forces you to do this, children all the more force you to be looking outwards. And third and finally, much more briefly, unaccountable. That's Sue's third danger. We're unaccountable. Because there's no one there seeing my life day in, day out, it can be that I begin to indulge in certain sins, I get into certain habits that are just not godly, but there's no one who can pick me up on it because I've sort of drawn a line myself and don't let anyone in. Now, marriage isn't the only answer to these things. Far from it. And the whole point of Sue's book is to say that actually that the church community can help, but only if I let people in. If I'm married, I'm forced to let my wife and my husband in because they're just there every day, every morning when I wake up, every night when I go to bed, so I can't hide. If we're not careful as single people, we can hide. We must let our brothers and sisters in. Singleness is a gift, but a gift with which to serve the Lord. And thirdly and finally, and much more briefly, singleness needs to be ended well. Singleness needs to be ended well. This is 36 to 40. I've said all the way through that marriage is not a bad thing in Paul's sight. We've seen that already. And in verse 36, he gives an example of a good reason to get married. If anyone thinks he's not behaving properly towards his betrothed, if his passions are strong and it has to be, well, let him do as he wishes. Let him marry. It's no sin. In this very specific case, and it's by no means the only reason to get married, but in this very specific case, there seems to be a problem in Corinth with guys thinking that somehow getting married and having sex is a sort of unbiblical, sort of unspiritual thing. Paul says, no, go for it, it's fine, it's not a sin. But notice again, it's purity, that it's devotion to the Lord that's driving them. I want you to be holy. The right outlet for sex is marriage, so if that's a sort of struggle, well, yeah, get married. You're engaged, get married. We won't skip through all of them, but if I'm single and I want to be married, that's fine. But God does give some guidelines so that my marriage, as much as my singleness, will be one of devotion to Him. I need to be thinking not just how can I find any guy to end the problem of loneliness, any girl to end the problem of my sexual frustration. I need to be thinking, how can I find someone with whom I can serve the Lord? That is the point of marriage. That's the only way to have a fulfilling marriage. There are only three rules in the Bible about who we should marry. One is they can't be currently married. Okay, you can't go pinching someone else's husband or wife. Second is they can't be a close relative. Okay, pretty much mum, dad, brother, sister, children. And the third is they have to be a Christian. That's perhaps the more surprising one, maybe. There's one reference to it here, verse 39. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. Her husband dies, she's free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Now, it's not that Christians are somehow better than people who aren't Christians. Far from it. It's simply that if I'm going to live a life of devotion, I need someone to help me. It's a battle. So if I marry someone who's not a Christian, the pull is always going to be away from the Lord, not towards them. They might be lovely. They might help me to be polite. They might help me to be a lovely person, but they are not going to help me in prayer and worship. They are not going to help me in devotion to Christ. Right way through the Old Testament and the New, we see it time and time again. Your partner is to be from the Lord, a Christian. Now, there are other things that in wisdom we might add. As you look to marry, and many of you who are single will get married, there's plenty of biblical advice out there, things to avoid in being driven purely by looks. Who makes me laugh? Who makes me feel special? The things to aim for. In particular, just three things that really are just wisdom things, I think. As you perhaps are dating someone, going out with them, working out, is this the right person? I think it's massively helpful to agree on three things. One is, how do we hear from God? How do we hear from God? There are lots of Christians out there who disagree on that issue. And it's just going to make marriage difficult if one person thinks, for instance, they hear from God directly in their head and the other person thinks that's not possible. You're going to get a clash, the authority question. The second is decision making. How do we make decisions? And particularly, what's the relationship between the husband and the wife? You need to be agreed on that sort of headship issue. And thirdly, what should church be like? I know of one couple who have to go to different churches because they're just so looking for different things. And it's just really hard work for them in their marriage. Now, none of these are rules. Okay, the Bible doesn't put those as rules. It's just wisdom. If you're going to give lives that are devoted to the Lord. And really, that's where I want to end. Because the question, how can I end my singleness well, will be one that hits at least 50% of the church. Whether you stay single your whole life, whether you marry and then your spouse dies, you will have to end your singleness well. And the end of all singleness is marriage to Christ. You know the end of the Bible story. When Christ returns, it says a husband looking for his bride, the church. That and that alone will be the time when you feel truly fulfilled, truly safe, truly secure, truly loved. And so that is why it's that relationship that is vitally important to give your entire heart to. As long as you've got that, then whatever else you miss in this world, that is nothing compared to the glories that will come. So set our hearts, says Paul. Set your hearts on the ultimate relationship, not a worldly one, but one with the Creator.